Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And today on Class Matters, we're going to take a look at a couple of subjects that are not covered by the corporate media. And that
that's very broad.
I know, exactly. There's quite a few things that aren't covered, but this going back to the area of foreign policy meaning U.S. imperialism, and the illegal and unlawful presence of U.S. military forces in other nations. And what I'm talking about today in particular are the nations of Syria and Somalia. Most Americans are mostly unaware of the fact that the United States continues to maintain a military presence in both of these countries.
Especially Syria. It occupies 30% of the country.
Yeah.
I bet you just about any American could tell you that Russia illegally is occupying Ukraine.
Yeah,
Though the people there voted, right?
Yeah.
But how many Americans can tell you the United States is illegally occupying 30% of Syria
and right,
stealing their oil to boot?
Yeah, yeah. Or at best, maybe some are vaguely aware of it, but it's just not talked about or discussed in the corporate media.
It's definitely not condemned.
Right, and it just goes down the memory hole. And I bet even more Americans are unaware that we have a military presence in the troubled nation of Somalia. So we wanted to devote today's program to kind of updating you on what's going on in both of these countries.
I bet they didn't know before that whole Black Hawk Down thing. And then they made a movie out of it, and then they left, but they're back.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so the first article is actually a little bit dated. It's from mid-April. It's by Vanessa Beely, an intrepid investigative journalist who has focused a lot on Syria, as well as Ukraine and other conflict areas. And this is an article she put out on her Substack. I think it's vanessabeely.substack.com, entitled Syria Updates, ISIS Massacres and Turkish Double Dealing. The U.S. continues its murder of civilians in central Syria using its ISIS proxies to carry out brutal attacks. I might, just by way of background, mention we've well documented on this program before with numerous articles. Despite the whole excuse being used for U.S. intervention in the Middle East in recent years was to fight ISIS, you know, the growing threat of ISIS, and before that it was Al-Qaeda, the United States, in fact, is supporting ISIS affiliates and Al-Qaeda affiliates in Syria during its efforts to try to overthrow the Assad government in the late teens.
And then they took some of them over to Libya to fight there, and they even flew some of them into Ukraine to fight with the Nazis of the Kiev regime.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I guess they had to move them back to start up on Syria again.
So anyway, they're continuing to murder people in Syria. On the 16th of April, at least 26 civilians were massacred in an attack on truffle hunters in the Duzin eastern countryside of the Hama governorate. So this is in Syria, a nation that has already undergone a terrible tragedy with the recent earthquake. And then the United States played a role in denying aid coming into that country, except through one very narrow place where basically the stuff would get funneled to the people it supports.
The terrorists, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And now they're doing this as well. It is reported by the Terrorist Bias, Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, that 12 of the martyrs were members of the National Defense Forces, that's the official Syrian forces, but the majority of the attacks and kidnap victims were civilians. The U.S. is known to have planted ISIS cells in the area east of Homs, and the threat to civilians or military is high.
So even going out and hunting truffles, which why are there truffles in the desert? But whatever, they had to have soldiers with them. Because of the terrorist threat
that
the United
right.
States backs and funds and arms.
Yeah.
Where do these people get all these weapons? Same place that the Kiev regime gets it, from the West.
Yeah, that's right. Syrian civilians trying to eke out a living in a country under economic attack from the West are forced to hire military protection to survive. Added to this, the desert is also still littered with ISIS and other terrorist group mines and IEDs. On the 17th of February, 53 people were killed in Homs al-Sukhna region near Palmyra, and dozens were kidnapped. According to local sources, 139 citizens have been murdered since the start of 2023, many since the double earthquake on February 6th. If you include military martyrs, the death toll stands at an estimated 289 people. A kilo of truffles in the Syrian market costs $22 to $65, and therefore, in such an economic depression, the risks are taken by civilians who would otherwise starve under U.S. sanctions and the siege. This is all part of the ongoing U.K. war of terror, U.S. and U.K. war of terror against the Syrian people.
She's a Brit.
Yeah, right. Erdogan appears to be under pressure. This is Turkish President Erdogan.
So far.
Yeah. From the U.S. after Russia and Iran have been trying to broker a political resolution between Turkey and Syria before Turkish elections this month.
Which the United States is openly backing the opponent to Erdogan.
Yeah.
But, you know, election interference by a foreign country is just horrible, unless the U.S. does it.
Yeah, that's right. Erdogan and his administration officials are refusing all concessions under the pretext of national security with a view to combating PKK terrorism controlled by the U.S. in northeast Syria under the rebrand of SDF, that's the Kurdish Contras. President Assad has made it very clear that no meeting will take place between the presidents until Erdogan gives assurances that Turkish military and proxy terrorist forces are withdrawn from Syrian territory. The U.S. is demonstrating yet again that peace is not on the agenda in the region and is using maximum pressure to prevent regional unity. Turkey is a NATO member state, something that Erdogan or his political opposition are unlikely to abandon. This is one reason Russia is now negotiating with a more compliant Saudi Arabia to sell energy to the EU via the Saudi Kingdom. And then it goes on for there with more of an analysis of the geopolitics. But we're not going to read the whole article, but would recommend it to you if you want to get more into what's going on in Turkey and the whole political situation there. But we mainly wanted to share that because of the update and a reminder of what the U.S. is still doing in Syria, in addition to, as we've documented not too long ago, stealing their oil. The area the U.S. is occupying there is the part of the country that has a little bit of oil reserves, and the U.S. is just stealing it and using trucks and so on to send it to Iraq for processing and so on. It's just
actually they built a refinery there recently.
That's true.
Right,
they did
there on Syrian stolen land.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And yet they're doing it.
With that, let's turn to Somalia and give you an update on that. This is from one of our favorite investigative journalist sources, the Gray Zone Project, at thegrayzone.com. This is an article by Ann Garrison and Jamal Abduhali. And it's entitled, U.S. Troops in Somalia Rise to 900, House Votes Not to Withdraw. This is a recent article from May 3rd.
And I read one from March on an earlier program, if anyone wants to look that up. Same woman.
Ann Garrison. She does good work on this.
Yeah.
The presence of U.S. troops in Somalia helps the Islamist insurgency al-Shabaab recruit, exacerbating the very violence they claim to be fighting. But the House in Congress, U.S. Congress, has voted down a resolution to withdraw. On April 27th, the House voted 101 to 321 against Republican Representative Matt Gaetz's resolution to remove all U.S. troops from Somalia, even as all signs point to escalation in the fight with al-Shabaab.
You know, I like that Matt Gaetz. He's really good. I'm wondering who the 101 who voted with him was.
And of course, Gaetz also, not too long ago, sponsored a resolution to do the same thing in Syria. It may be surprising to some people, but the very few voices opposing the forever wars in U.S. Congress now are primarily Republican.
New Republicans,
exactly.
Except for Rand Paul.
Yeah.
He's been there a while, but
right. Most
of them are the newer Republicans.
Continuing, but at least Matt Gaetz tried.
At least Matt Gaetz gets it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. AFRICOM, the U.S. Africa Command, and Somalia's President Hassan Sheikh Mohammed are both asking for more U.S. presence, more funds, more weapons, more drones, and fewer restrictions on how they're used.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, really. The resolution did not call for an end to the drone bombing, only for the withdrawal of U.S. troops. Gaetz had no expectation that it would pass, but he forced all 435 members of the House to go on record for or against another costly U.S. forever war. Conceivably, they'll have to answer for their votes in 2024, perhaps to the U.S.'s tiny anti-war community, but more likely to the America First political movement that gets shares with Donald Trump.
The vote that's the thing. The people that are actually have family in the military do tend to be more America First kind of people.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is the thing.
Yeah.
The people that are profiting from the military, well, those are the Democrats in Congress and most of the Republicans.
Yeah, yeah. This vote ensures that the U.S. will maintain a military presence in Somalia until at least after the next election cycle. At least 900 U.S. troops have been stationed in Somalia, playing an advisory role, while the national army they train takes heavy casualties on the battlefield against the Islamist al-Shabaab forces. You know, it's kind of interesting, 900 U.S. troops. I think that's basically about the same number in Syria. It's almost like there's some number where...
magic number.
Yeah, exactly. Enough to maintain a presence so that we can control territory and we can affect political outcomes, but not enough to be a major presence, you know? It's almost like they've settled on this number for some reason.
Well, the ones in Syria are basically as a tripwire, as a little... oh no, you can't get them out. You cannot stop the stealing of the oil, because if you touch one hair on an American soldier's head, the whole might and power of the United States military will come down on your country. And, you know, they know the United States. They'll kill a million people.
Yeah.
If one soldier gets harmed. So that's why they don't do it. That's why they sit there and watch. Their people go cold and hungry as America steals their oil and their wheat.
Yeah. Not to mention that Turkey periodically bombs Syria, and so does Israel. So,
Israel's also occupying part of Syria, the Golan Heights. That is Syria, and Israel is illegally occupying that.
Yes, yes.
And yeah, Turkey, they better, well, we'll see what happens with the elections next month.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Continuing, though, with the Ann Garrison article on Somalia, located in the strategically significant Horn of Africa, Somalia not only has the longest coastline in Africa, but perhaps the world's largest untapped coastal oil reserves. Aha! Motive. In 2021, the Somali government signed a $7 million oil exploration deal with the Houston, Texas-based company Coastline. Though congressional hawks justify the U.S. military presence in Somalia in terms of freedom and counterterrorism...
At a certain point, you'd think they would drop that.
Yeah.
It's so blatantly... obvious that they have nothing to do with freedom or democracy.
Yeah, there's no...
especially as they stomp down on freedom here in America.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And most of these countries are not even remotely democratic.
Right.
Including Somalia. But in any event, although that is the excuse given, the country's geography and potentially massive oil wealth make it a key strategic prize for Washington. Getz and the co-sponsors of the resolution to withdraw from Somalia were all Republicans. 52 Republicans and 50 Democrats voted in favor of a pullout, while 165 Republicans and 156 Democrats voted no. 12 House members did not vote. The vote closely resembled the results on Getz's failed resolution to withdraw from Syria, which brought together a left-right coalition in support, while the bipartisan pro-war majority express vehement opposition. So I guess there are a few Democrats involved.
That's interesting.
In this too.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so disgusted with them about Ukraine that I just assume they're like that in every other country.
Right,
too.
Exactly. There, it's almost lockstep for everybody. In his press release, Getz wrote, "When the U.S. debated my resolution to withdraw troops from Syria, both Republicans and Democrats argued the 2001 authorization for use of military force against Afghanistan serves as a global permission slip for every neocon fantasy. They will argue the same for Somalia."
Oh, wow, that's pretty good. He said that?
Yeah, that's very insightful.
That is very insightful.
Yeah,
and I think didn't he try to get rid of the 2001 authorization for use of military force?
There was an effort, but I don't think it's actually gone yet.
Okay. I mean, come on now, that was 22 years ago, and the United States has now openly supported Al-Qaeda in Libya and in Syria, and they're still using that same law?
Yeah, I know. It's
a resolution, crazy. I mean, it's not a law, a resolution. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Remember, ISIS showed up in Afghanistan. Well, the United States was still there for a little while.
Yeah, yeah.
What is it? Islamic State of Syria and Iraq. That's what ISIS stands for. I mean, Iraq and Syria. That's what ISIS stands for. But they showed up in the Philippines. They showed up in Afghanistan. They showed up wherever the United States wanted to put or keep bases, yeah. as it turns out. Isn't that odd? If yeah. they're there for Iraq and Syria, why are they in Pakistan?
Yeah, well, they're so cosmopolitan.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
In any event, Goetz's prediction was correct, although some said the authorization for use of military force should be revisited and rewritten with a narrower scope. Yeah, right.
Sure. No, now we say you can help Al-Qaeda. You can use Al-Qaeda for your goals.
Yeah, yeah. Most reports are likening Goetz's resolution to withdraw from Somalia to the effort he previously led to force a U.S. military pullout from Syria, but there is a key distinction between the two situations. In Syria, U.S. troops are violating international law because they are not welcomed by the government in Damascus. They are an occupying force violating Syrian sovereignty. In Somalia, however, President Hassan Sheikh Mohammed is all in with U.S. drones in the air and troops on the ground tweeting his thanks to Joe Biden. His only complaint has been that he's not getting enough air support. The U.S. shoehorned Mohammed into power in May 2022 by using the IMF to batter Somalia into holding a corrupt clan-based election. They now have a willing collaborator whom many Somalis consider to be their puppet.
But he's killing his own people.
Yeah, well, that's right.
I guess they can't use that excuse.
Yeah.
Since they're on his side.
Yeah.
Well, actually, since they're helping do the killing.
Right, right. He is doing that, but they're not going to say
Same
that.
Same with Ukraine. They killed their own people for 8 years.
Yep. Moreover, anti-American sentiment is widespread, and the U.S. presence serves as a recruiting tool for al-Shabaab. On the same day the House voted not to withdraw troops, Brown University's Costs of War Project reported, quote, "The United States says its goals in Somalia are to eliminate al-Shabaab and promote peace. The paper documents how U.S. counterterrorism policies are having the opposite effect and ensuring that the conflict continues in perpetuity. It concluded that al-Shabaab is still on the rise 16 years after its emergence and noted, the U.S. spends more on counterterrorism in Somalia each year than the federal Somali government earns in tax revenue." So, yeah, this is good for the military-industrial complex, folks. This is another one of the motives involved in it. Keep these wars going.
Help those dictators kill their own people.
Yeah, that's right. Keep our drone operators employed. Al-Shabaab arose in response to the U.S.-backed Ethiopian invasion of Somalia when Ethiopia was led by a longtime U.S. client, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF. The TPLF overthrew Somalia's Islamic Courts Union and occupied the country from 2006 to 2009, while al-Shabaab flourished in an atmosphere of national resistance. Thus, as T.J. Coles documented for the Gray Zone, the U.S. is now fighting the very terrorists it created.
Well, the Islamic Courts was an attempt to stop the lawlessness that had been going on for what? 15, 16 years at that point.
Right.
And most of the country supported it, but the United States didn't.
Yes.
So, yeah. So then Ethiopia just happened to invade.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, she's got a link to that T.J. Coles article, so you can get more background if you like. Now, al-Shabaab did take an oath of allegiance to al-Qaeda, but its connection is more ideological than operational. President Donald Trump increased drone bombing, but withdrew nearly all U.S. special forces in Somalia at the end of his term in December 2020. But guess what? On May 16, 2022, the day after President Hassan Sheikh Mohammed was reelected, President Joe Biden signed off on a Pentagon proposal to reintroduce troops and establish a small, persistent presence. That's a quote. "We're working now to evaluate local conditions, including those following the Somalia presidential election yesterday," said Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby in a Defense Department press release. "And we're engaging partners in the region, including the Somali government, to determine the best way forward." On the same day, the New York Times reported that the decision would revive an open-ended American counterterrorism operation that has amounted to a slow-burn war through three administrations. The Times also reported that people familiar with the matter said the number of troops would be capped at 450.
450, but now it's 900.
Now
it's like they
900.
Literally doubled it.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, that's
a small,
right.
Small, persistent force, kind of like ticks.
Yeah, we capped it, but we decided to double again.
Yeah, Double down.
But that reference to three administrations also reminds me this did ramp up under the Obama administration. You saw the big increase in drone strikes in Somalia during that time, during that administration. Okay, anyway. Now, roughly a year later, during the April 27th debate about the resolution to withdraw troops from Somalia, Getz and Congressman Ryan Zinke, a Republican from Montana, each stated there are about 900 U.S. troops in Somalia. Getz serves on the House Armed Services Committee, Zinke on Military Construction, Veterans Affairs, and Related Agencies, an Appropriations Subcommittee, so they would be perfectly positioned to know. Zinke, a former Navy SEAL, argued for further escalation by invoking the Hollywood action blockbuster Black Hawk Down, which dramatized the botched and bloody U.S. military humanitarian intervention in Mogadishu in 1993. Now, quoting Zinke, this is kind of an extended quote, "Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in opposition. But I agree with my distinguished colleague from Florida," apparently referring to Getz, "that Congress has an obligation to review it. Congress should not abrogate our responsibility. We should ask the tough questions. And ultimately, we should provide the funding necessary and the resources to win. That's our job. And I agree with you 100%. Well, clearly he doesn't 100%. But anyway, as a commander, they are doing more than just guarding an embassy. A force structure of 900 may seem like a large footprint. But those of us who remember Black Hawk Down would suggest otherwise. A force requires medevac. Those medevac require people that service those aircraft. In case we get in trouble, we need a quick reaction force, a force large enough to defend our troops." So you see the kind of circular reasoning here, right? We have troops in Somalia, therefore we need more troops in order to protect the troops that we already have there. And this is part of his justification. Continuing with the quote from Congressman Ryan Zinke, "Because I, unlike my colleagues, know that if you were to put any American servicemen in harm's way, we want to ensure we have the adequate force to make sure they're recovered safely. They also have to be fed, communications. In order to have an effective force, you need a footprint that can do its mission." Ending the quote there. "When service members with the skill sets that Zinke listed are added to the 900 U.S. Special Forces figure, the total number of U.S. troops could be in the thousands. The Special Forces are already supported by a fleet of U.S. Navy ships off Somalia's coast, in the Gulf of Aden, the Arabian Sea, and the Indian Ocean, and additional troops at the U.S. military base in neighboring Djibouti. The Biden administration has been tacitly supporting the secessionist movement in Somalia's northern Somaliland state, seemingly in exchange for a military base site in the coastal city of Berbera. The plan to work directly with Somaliland, bypassing the Somali government to establish the base in Berbera, is outlined in the 2023 National Defense Appropriation Act, or NDAA. So once again, this is another example of an American administration playing off both sides of a conflict. In this case, I guess more than two sides, but supporting the official Somali government while at the same time working to undermine it. This plan, however, suffered a major setback when a brutal war broke out between Somaliland secessionists and unionists in the city of Las Anad and the surrounding region of Sul, Sanang, and Kayan, also known as SSC. Many died, many more were injured, and more than 200,000 may be displaced in the ongoing conflict. Once again, a whole other war that's going on that you hear absolutely nothing about in the corporate so-called news media. The secessionist militias are on the outskirts of Las Anad, periodically shelling the city with artillery, and residents anticipate more violence after a Ramadan lull. U.S. and EU officials asked Somaliland officials to withdraw from the SSC region, but merely expressed disappointment when they did not. So, a little bit of wink-wink there. As the U.S. promotes the division of Somalia, it is propping up the corrupt and nominally functioning national government of President Hassan Sheikh Mohammed, which has no popular support inside or outside the capital of Mogadishu. U.S. Brigadier General Peter Bailey issued a revealing set of comments to NBC, stating that Somalis need democratic reform to make sure the government is recognized as being legitimate. Well, that's clearly kind of an outlier opinion, maybe because he's only a brigadier general. Occasionally, they find these people who speak little snippets of the truth, and that seems to be what happened here. Shortly after returning to power, Mohammed declared total war on al-Shabaab, bidding for a new influx of support from the U.S. and promising a quick victory. However, nearly a year later, al-Shabaab still controls large swaths of land, mostly in central and southern Somalia, through a combination of brute force, racketeering, and sheer terror. Control of contested areas seesaws with dizzying frequency. One of Mohammed's key strategies proved to be a spectacular failure. He armed clan militias in central Somalia, claiming to empower local resistance. Some then set up roadblocks to collect illegal taxes in Middle Shabelle, while others converged on Mogadishu to challenge his own authority. He responded comically that he would ban machine guns mounted on vehicles and rocket-propelled grenades, weapons that he himself had distributed in the streets of Mogadishu. The strategy of infusing clan politics into the Somali National Army, or SNA, led to high casualties and low morale. Many were killed after being lured into remote towns and then running out of ammunition. Among the high-profile casualties was the commander of Danab, meaning lightning, an elite U.S.-trained commando brigade. The U.S. has spent $80 million to train, equip, feed, and pay salaries for Danab. Bancroft Global, a private contractor for the State Department, vets and recruits its members. So once again, a lot of money flowing, and really, to some extent, that is the point here. The casualty rate is much higher in other branches of the SNA. Many deserted at a faster rate than they can be replaced. Casualties and desertion have made the SNA a largely spent force, despite that $80 million.
Bet that U.S. corporation still rakes in the bucks.
Oh, yeah.
The State Department.
That's right, they sure do. Washington insists that Somalia is leading the war against al-Shabaab, while the U.S. is simply training and assisting its armed forces. However, a series of recent events demonstrate that the U.S. is fully in charge of operations. Ambassador Larry André, a Foreign Service veteran, orchestrates from within Mogadishu's Halaan, a sprawling and heavily fortified compound like the Green Zone in Iraq. In February, André arranged public relations offenses by embedding New York Times and NBC reporters with U.S. Special Forces to produce pieces about the conflict. The New York Times confirmed that Somali forces have been taking heavy casualties in recent months. Times correspondent Eric Schmidt described a graduation ceremony for new recruits of Danab, which was shrouded in sadness because the brigade had sustained heavy losses.
It sounds like Ukraine also.
Yeah, it does. They're just throwing people into the conflict as cannon fodder.
Yeah.
Many of the recruits will be rushed to the front lines to backfill two Danab battalions decimated by an al-Shabaab attack last month that left more than 100 soldiers dead or injured. While public relations led by the U.S. Embassy in Mogadishu was kicking into high gear, the State Department convened a meeting in Washington, D.C. that included the U.K., United Arab Emirates, Qatar, and Turkey. The meeting took place on February 28, 2023. Among the agenda items was America's request that its partners shoulder some of the financial burden of the prolonged war.
That also
well, of
sounds
course
familiar.
They do. Yeah, exactly. They do that all the time.
We're starting wars and we want you to pay for it.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. Please help us pay for it. Also on February 28th, the U.S. Embassy announced that it was sending 60 tons of new weapons and ammunition to Baldogle to be used against al-Shabaab. On March 1st, President Mohamud's National Security Advisor Hussein Sheikh Ali announced that Ethiopia and Kenya would be sending 30,000 more troops to help Somalia fight al-Shabaab. On March 29th, President Biden nominated Richard H. Riley to replace Larry André. Riley has served in significant positions in Pakistan, Norway, Afghanistan, Yemen, Egypt, and Iraq. All these recent developments promise escalation and the likelihood of more U.S. boots on Somali soil. And, of course, more weapons, more drone strikes, more ships. more of the same, more forever wars in Africa, even though you don't hear about it virtually at all in the corporate media. That's all the time we have, but that's the end of that article. Again, you can find it at thegrayzone.com. It's entitled U.S. Troops in Somalia Rise to 900 as House Votes Not to Withdraw. Thanks for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.